Welcome to the Kilogram Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Dunbar. As always, stay tuned for your CPD code within the episode. In this one, I'm chatting to the head of Kilogram Technical Department, Dr. Matthew Davies, and we're discussing the ins and outs of the Kilogram Insect ID service. Let's get into it. Hi, Matt. How's it going?
I'm Mike, doing well, thanks. I'm really looking forward to this podcast.
Yes, I bet you are. Obviously, anyone that has met you will know that your true love lays with the arthropods, doesn't it?
That's it, yeah, especially the insects. That's my main thing. So we've done our duty with rodent stuff before, haven't we?
That's right, yeah. I felt a bit bad for sort of just letting you do a rodent podcast. So I've got to get Matt back on then and talk about the good old insects. So it's all good. So how have you been since the last time we spoke?
Yeah, similar to yourself, nice and busy at Kilogram, plenty of training courses, inspections, technical advice, and, of course, we have been busy with the Insect ID service, which is part of today, isn't it?
Amazing, yeah, absolutely. So I guess a good point to start is to get a bit of background into that love and infatuation with insects that you have, right? So what got you into insects in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it started back at University of York, mm-hmm. general biology course, insects were on that, which was great. But I think way back, short trousers, school kid style stuff. I did a year in industry as part of my degree at the Central Science Labs, which most people now will know that in Sandhutton, York, as Food and Environment Research Agency.
Oh, amazing.
/ AFHA, APHA, Animal Plant Health Agency.
Wow, brilliant.
So I picked up some good information there, but really, it was more when I met Professor Murray Anderson,
yep.
who was our technical director at Kilogram, and there'll be plenty of people listening to the podcast that think of Murray and fondly remember his lectures and everything else and his personality. I think, weirdly, it was the person that got me hooked on the insects.
And amazing.
It was that way around. That enthusiasm sort of rubbed off on me, as it did anybody who dealt with Murray during Kilogram times. So, yeah, I'll make sure I go see him at some point. I'll be down in Birmingham before long.
Oh, that'd be great.
Nice to catch up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, it started from that really. Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Infectious enthusiasm from Murray.
That's it, yeah. And
the rest... bug, yeah, a bit of a pun there.
Yeah, a bit of a bug, yeah. And the rest is history, as they say. Definitely. Fantastic. So you've already mentioned the Insect ID service, and for many listeners, it'll be a familiar service, something that they've used before. But for those that haven't, could you just tell us a little bit more about that, please?
Yeah, definitely. I'll give a rundown of what it entails. There's actually a little video that we put on social media.
Awesome.
If you follow Kilogram Chemicals on the various social media channels, we've got a video of me running through what happens with the ID service.
That's right.
There's a couple of visual things on there, which are good to see. But yeah, the idea is that as per our training, we need to identify the species first.
Yep.
That determines the appropriate control measures, housekeeping, hygiene, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got the ability to do that with the insect samples. There's actually an insect ID request form on our website. So people do a bit of paperwork, fill that in,
yep.
send the insect in the post, the Kilogram identification, and use the address that's on the website there. And make sure it's in sturdy packaging, we'll say like a screw top vial,
yep.
like a 30ml sample pot. Just means it doesn't get crushed in the post,
absolutely.
Which would make our lives harder. Once that arrives into Kilogram, we forward it on to our esteemed entomologist, Jonathan Binge, who does the vast majority of our insect IDs. I do a certain amount as well.
Awesome.
And then the results come back into the office via Jonathan, and we generate reports that get sent out to our customers with all the info you need, biology, habits, distribution, a few identification features for people that are enthusiastic about that sort of stuff, and control measures as well, and significance, you know, how much of a risk is that to public health. And it's what pest controllers need. We've got that information at our fingertips then. So yeah, really, really good service. That was a short summary of what happens. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, amazing. And it's so useful. You know, certain companies will have people within their companies that are capable of doing that, but those that don't, you know, we don't carry microscopes in our back pockets and exactly. something that we can whip out and definitely identify it positively as this particular species. So they're very, very useful. So are there any arthropods, I'm going to say,
okay.
amongst that group that gets sent in that we tend to avoid identifying, and what should the customers do if that's the case?
Definitely. So the Insect ID service is exactly that. Mm-hmm. It is the insects
yep.
of the arthropods. We don't formally identify spider specimens.
Okay.
We do get some sent in,
mm-hmm.
and we will write back to our customers and say, look, we deal purely with the insects, not the arachnids, the spiders. if you did need a formal spider identification, you can try the Natural History Museum.
Okay.
They do have a service for that. And it is sometimes possible to contact the British Arachnological Society, and you may be able to receive some help from them. But yeah, we don't formally deal with the spiders, so we don't recommend people send those in, and we stick purely to the insect samples, which, to be fair, is the main sort of cause of complaint in public health pest control anyway.
Absolutely.
Specialising in that area is the right thing to do.
That's it, yeah. As not a lover of spiders personally, I can definitely see that being a popular sample sent in. So, based on that, obviously, you know, service has been going for quite a while. So we've got some data that we can sort of refer to with regards to the sort of species and the amount of samples. So how many samples do we receive at Kilogym?
Do you know, it's a lot. It's approximately 4,000 insect samples that we receive every year.
Wow.
Go through that identification process with a microscope, use the dichotomous keys and generate those reports. So there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes there.
Definitely.
And it's probably a bit of an underrated service, if I'm honest. When you look at the sheer numbers, I know that the Natural History Museum down in London, they've got a team of entomologists, and they deal with a similar number of insects to us, and we're a small team behind the scenes. But yeah, impressive numbers, definitely.
Amazing. So out of all of those, it was 4,000 annual samples. That's a great number. Is there any one species that stands out amongst others in terms of the volume that we receive?
Yes. So certainly for the last 2 years' worth of data from our insect ID reports, book lice, the sowsince, or the Cercoptera, they're number one.
Right.
We get more book lice than any other insect sent in.
Amazing. Why do you think that is?
A few reasons. I think book lice in general are very numerous, so there's plenty of them. The areas that they are active in are, you know, broad, widespread. It can be domestic homes, it can be museums, it can be anywhere where there's a commodity that can support a certain amount of mould growth.
I get you.
And have that humidity problem as well. Also, I think that they're a little bit on the smaller side for most people, and they're possibly not the most familiar insects to some pest controllers.
Right.
And sometimes it's a bit of a lack of familiarity which drives the numbers up in terms of what we receive. If it's a dead familiar day-to-day insect, we're not going to receive many of those as a sample for identification.
That makes
sense.
It's
not like people are sending us the common wasp.
Yes,
you know, as an ID thing, because we know what that is. But yeah, plenty of them, wide variety of situations, and probably a bit of an unfamiliarity thing as well.
Absolutely. They're absolutely minuscule as well, aren't they? Yeah, absolutely. So on the sort of flip side, have you noticed any insects that are sort of declined in numbers? So we've seen steady numbers for certain, but
changes in numbers. I think I would say that it's not necessarily a decline in the number of biscuit beetle samples in Panaceum, just that they've been overtaken by book lice.
I see.
Prior to the last couple of years, Stegobium panaceum, the biscuit beetle, or drumstore beetle, if we're thinking of the American texts, that was our number one insect.
Right, okay.
And yeah, just been overtaken by book lice. And I think to sort of answer your question about book lice, why were we getting so many biscuit beetles?
Yeah.
Again, very numerous when you find them in a wide range of properties. And the similarity between biscuit beetles and the furniture beetle, Anobium punctatum, or woodworm,
The
more informal, and also another similar species, cigarette beetle, tobacco beetle, Lacinoderma, Cerricornis. So I think people understand the need to tell them apart. Either, I'll be a bit sort of glib here, but either it's throwaway packet of digestives if it's the biscuit beetle, or your house is going to fall down if woodworm are attacking the timbers. But yeah, knowing the crucial difference between those two was one of the big drivers for the sheer number of samples of us.
Absolutely. And it's a good distinction to make, as you said, because the approach to how you're going to, you know, inspect, treat, and actually get to the root problem is completely different, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely different.
So have you seen any sort of trends of insect species, shall we say, rearing their heads in recent years?
I suppose I can do a bit of a history thing. There's a few answers to this.
Mm.
In the late 2000s, to the sort of 20-teens, I would say.
Yeah.
We had that spike in bedbug samples, Simex lectularius received.
Yeah.
And that certainly matched up to that global resurgence of bedbug activity. But since then, the numbers we've received have declined.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it represents a decline in vendor activity. I just think we've become more familiar with them.
Yes.
Not needing to confirm it and send them in for yeah. ID. And that's a common thing that we observe mm-hmm. when we get a relatively new pest. That initial interest, the spike, the unfamiliarity, the industry learns, and then perhaps the numbers of samples tail off a bit. And yeah, because we've got that sort of data set from over the years, we've definitely seen that with bed bugs.
Definitely.
That's one. But yeah, other insects on the horizon, and new and sort of weird things, I can answer that one.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. I think one thing that stands out in certainly 2024, 2025, is the third highest numbers of insects. That spot belongs to Lasius brunaeus.
Okay.
The brown ant.
Yeah.
And that's certainly over the last number of years increased. And to see it at number three on the podium
absolutely.
Probably isn't a surprise
because mm-hmm.
we've had that trend creeping in. And it could potentially be easily misidentified with the common black garden ant, Lasius niger.
Yes.
And again, people are becoming alert to this. An ant species with a bit of a different behaviour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in insulation, in beams, oak, in houses, an early swarm, sometimes in July.
Yeah.
Slightly different behaviour to Lasius niger. And yeah, that one does stand out. So we pick up these trends in the reports, in the data. So yeah, that's one that's been rearing its head, I would say.
That's it, yeah, amazing. It's interesting because it, like you said, it doesn't necessarily mean that the number of those insects has all of a sudden increased. It's the awareness of pest controllers out there of the differences between those species and how we approach them and what products we're able to use
yeah.
that has led to that increase.
Yeah, do you know, I've never looked at this, but possibly for certain years and certain peaks in insect numbers, some of it may be driven by media attention.
Mm, yes.
Members of the public get a bit more alert.
Yeah.
More likely to seek help following news stories. So there's probably that as well with certain pests.
Absolutely. It'd
be interesting to look at that retrospectively, actually.
Definitely. I did think that when you mentioned bed bugs, the sort of the bed bug gate of whenever it was.
Exactly.
2024, I think, three, something like
that. That could have had an influence, perhaps.
Definitely. Just a quick interruption to give you the all-important CPD code for this episode. The code is species-CPD-845. That's species-CPD-845. Now back to the podcast. So obviously amongst all of those samples that you're receiving, there'll be some that you're very familiar with and you can almost glance and say, this is what it is. Have you received any weird and wonderful or obscure insect samples sort of worth noting?
Yeah, do you know, we do from time to time. And I suppose before I get into the specifics, as a general point, that's probably the thing that myself and Jonathan enjoy the most.
Yeah.
When we come across something completely new that we haven't seen,
mm-hmm.
it really tests us. It piques our interest. We rely completely on the dichotomous keys, the entomological textbooks. And if perhaps we struggle with it, we can call on our international colleagues.
Okay.
You know, we've got Doc Mitchell in USA. We've got the full sort of European technical team to draw on. And often these guys and girls have encountered these insects before us.
Yes.
And we're sort of a number of years behind,
mm-hmm.
you know, mainly due to climate and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we can pull on our international expertise with that, which is great, really satisfying. I'll pick one out. And it was a spider, so I was sort of backtracking on my own advice. Don't send us spiders.
That's right.
But we were presented with a black widow spider.
Oh, wow.
A true black widow.
Oh, dear.
Latrodectus mactans. And I know we don't identify spiders, but it's so distinctive.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that made me sort of wobble, it was live.
Ooh.
And I did discreetly disappear the relevant part of the building where we have a freezer to dispatch humanely. Arthropods of such nature.
Yeah.
So I dealt with that. But we don't. Yeah, we're not keen on live things.
No, definitely. Do you receive many live samples?
We do from time to time. So in a sort of cheerful way, there might be a few listeners on the podcast that think, whoops, that was me. I sent something in live to kill germ. And yeah, you know, we can't go and do that, of course. I think, yes, we have received live fleas in the post and live bed bugs as well. And obviously that carries risks, isn't the right thing. So we always ask that samples are dead. Before being sent to us and securely packaged. Best way is just to stick them in the freezer. Do that at least overnight and they'll be dead and safe to post on. But yeah, obviously, you know, Jonathan and I are nimble to respond and know the right thing to do. But yeah, please don't send live things in. I sometimes think it might be an accident, or it might be a customer thinks, you know, I'm sick of Matt. I'm going to tease him, send him something in, catch him out live as a bit of a punishment. But yeah, let's move on from the live stuff.
Please don't do that.
Yeah, please.
That's the general message. Yeah. Perfect. So obviously we know with insects they cannot control their own body temperature. They're dependent on the external factors. So we do get what we call an insect season. So even doing sort of trend analysis of fly counts, you know, you see that increase in the summer months. Is that sort of reflected in the types of species and the amount of samples we receive during those periods as well?
Yeah, definitely. We get that seasonal trend, and it's so clear in the sample data.
Yeah,
I sort of sit there and think, right, we're literally about to get our first cluster fly sample
from the
Insect ID service. And I think I sort of cheat. I think I did this with you and the technical guys. I was showing off one day.
That's right.
The Teams group that we got. Oh, guys, you know, I predict we'll get the first cluster fly sample tomorrow.
Yes.
And of course I did. And I was full of my own importance. And you guys were like, oh, there goes Matt again showing off. And I cheated, actually. I looked at the weather forecast near us.
Oh, yeah.
I know that when it gets to around 10 degrees C, that seems to trigger Pollenia rudis to come in and start overwintering.
Oh, there we go.
That coincided with us receiving samples. And that sort of wave of temperature, you know, follows through the country, doesn't it? You know, Scotland.
Definitely.
Coldest, and it sort of ripples down through the south.
Mm.
And we even see that geographical thing with cluster flies, sort of cascading down the country.
Nice.
But yeah, I'll check the weather forecast again. And
that's it. You were very smug about it for at least a week after.
A little bit.
No, fantastic. So what is the procedure? You say you and Jonathan get very excited when you receive a sample that you haven't seen before and you're not quite sure what it is. So tell us a little bit more through the process of what happens when you see one of those insects.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we've got various keys that are the traditional dichotomous keys. We've got pictorial keys. We can rely on those. We're obviously looking at these things under the microscope for the detailed anatomical features that we need for true insect identification. It's not recognition or match the pictures.
That's it.
It's that detailed approach. We also have a number of sort of reference samples that we've built. And I know that doesn't cover something that's brand new, but some of the less frequently encountered groups or specimens, we tend to have a bank of those in our own collection and can refer to that if we need to. And if something's completely brand new, we will start at the beginning. We'll go for that general entomological text, get it down to, you know, order, family, genus, species, pull out the more detailed keys that are specific to that group of insects and work our way through methodically. And that can be the exciting bit, sort of starting from scratch with an insect like that. So yeah, very, very diligent in that. And I think I mentioned earlier, if we need that reassurance, then we will often share that sample with a colleague who might be international, just to give that sort of professional pat on the back and reconfirm what we found.
That's it, yeah.
And I think that's a good part of insect ID, to have a bit of self-doubt.
Yeah.
It can sometimes force you to go back and look at a specimen a second time.
Definitely.
Check the texts, involve a colleague, go for that reassurance and that professional approach. And yeah, nothing wrong with that. If we were overconfident, then we could run the risk of getting things wrong. So yeah, that human aspect is a good thing, really.
Definitely. Sounds like quite an achievement for you guys that have sort of, for lack of a better expression, had your heads in insects for years and years and years. For you guys to receive something you've never seen before and that sort of gets you scratching your head, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like we're probably challenging listeners now. We'll get really random stuff set just to try and catch us out.
Yeah. Absolutely, amazing. So what would you recommend? What sort of resources would you use, I guess, rather than recommend? What sort of resources do you guys use? So you've mentioned dichotomous keys. Could you just describe what a dichotomous key is for those that don't know, and what other bits of equipment would you need?
Sure. I think best way to describe it is a bit like, I suppose, some of the books you may have read as a kid where you make a choice. Do you go through the red door? If the answer is yes, you turn to page 137.
Mm-hmm.
If you go through the blue door, you turn to page 162. And, you know, you fall through a trap door and that's the end of the story. you know, the main character is dead. But it's a series of choices and questions that lead you through a story.
Okay.
To get to the final conclusion, which is the species itself.
Yes.
And the really good dichotomous keys, the questions that are asked, there's a really clear contrast between the two options.
Yeah.
And this would be an example of a bad key. You might have a beetle, store product insect beetle, and the options are it's reddish brown, go to question 3,
mm-hmm.
or it's brownish red.
Yeah.
Go to question 7. And I'm thinking, what's the difference between reddish brown and brownish red? There needs to be a more clear, distinct choice that's nice and separate rather than this sort of muddy in the water, vague bit in the middle.
Definitely.
So you want to try and avoid things like that. And there's a bit of an example I use on courses. If we're trying to identify a person based on eye colour,
yes,
we would say, do you have blue eyes? The answer mm-hmm. is yes, move on. The next question is, you do not have blue eyes, and you have to painstakingly work your way through all the different colour options and get there in the end. So yeah, it can take time and it can be laborious, but it's the best way,
the
best way to do it. I think dichotomous keys can be difficult language to follow and a bit unwieldy. I, for sort of recognition in the field,
mm-hmm.
I have a copy of the Killjoe Manual, which is really good.
Yep.
It's obviously a bit on the bulky side. It'd be nice to have it as an app at some point in the future.
Definitely.
And I do really like, and the Natural History Museum entomologists sort of recommend this one as a recognition thing in the field rather than a true key. But Insects of Britain and Western Europe by Michael Chinnery.
Yeah.
A few versions available of that, and you can get that from second-hand bookstores and online sellers pretty cheap. That sort of thing I pack in my bag when I'm away with work.
That's it.
Even if I'm away, you know, away from work.
Yeah.
So just a handy little reference book like that is nice and neat and tidy. So yeah, that's one I would recommend.
Amazing.
This is it for part one. Make sure to tune in to part two, where Matt and I continue discussing the intricacies of insect identification. See you there.